Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 164 of the Stone Age Gamer Podcast for the week of August 25th, 2017. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me as always is unpopular dragon simulator Dan Ryan.
I was really offended by that one, but hey...
Well, make sure you write letters to all the people who reviewed you negatively to let them know that they're just not controlling you, right?
That is certainly what I'm going to do. As soon as we're done the podcast, I'm going to get on the old AOL, see if I can't IM someone.
It's, wow, I didn't write that. Oh, wait, I did write that.
Yeah.
What a day. It's the last week of the month, so that means it's time once again for the 10, 20, 30. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line, and you can let us know what you think of our show, what you think of Dan's hair that you can't see because it's an audio podcast, what right. topics you would like us to discuss in the future, like Dan's hair, or just say hello to Dan's hair, because we always want to hear from you, Dan's hair.
It's currently in a top knot like Thoros of Mir, except I have more hair than he does. Not by much, but I'm winning in the hair battle.
So, Dan, besides your hair, how are you?
Oh, Chris, I'm pretty good. I'm currently so Puzzle and Dragons does these ranking dungeons mm-hmm. every now and again where you compete with the rest of the North American player base to see how high you can score in a dungeon, and currently I am ranked in the top 12% of player.
Huh.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah.
That's not too shabby. I think I can crack the top 10. I don't know. We'll see. There's a little bit of luck involved in it too, because like it's kind of combo based in how you can rack up a lot of points, and if you can get a lot of shit to Skyfall down, that would be great, because there's only so many natural combos you can make on the board, so even if you're close to maximizing your boards, you're still not going to get as high as people with better luck, you know? So I don't know, we'll see, we'll keep working on it. Other than that, things are good. How are you?
I'm living the dream. I'm hanging in there. Just went out and saw one of the co-owners of Level Up is leaving. He's still going to be a co-owner and do all sorts of other stuff, but he's not going to be at the store anymore. Sean Rothrow, we had him on the show before.
Oh, he's leaving the store? No shit.
Yeah, he got a pretty badass job in New York. So,
good for him.
Yeah, good for him indeed. So, I just went to go say goodbye to him, which is why we're starting this a bit late. And so I hung out with him, bought a couple of weeks worth of comics that was I didn't buy for the last couple of weeks. I was really behind on my books, so I got plenty to read going forward.
Are you reading Secret Empire, by the way?
I'm not.
I really like it.
Not out of any like, ew, screw that, just right. out of a, you know, it just didn't even, it just didn't land in my pile of books, so.
It's real. I'm really enjoying it.
I'm glad. I'm not reading a lot. I'm reading Ninja Turtles. I'm reading Spider-Man Deadpool. I'm reading the X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue, and Astonishing X-Men.
Those have all been pretty good.
Yeah, so far. I mean, I only got the first issue of Astonishing, but the Blue and Gold, I'm really, really digging them. Really digging both those books.
It's been a while.
Star Wars. Star Wars is great.
Star Wars is great.
And I think that's it. Turtles universe, any Turtles crossovers, right. That kind of stuff. I don't think I'm doing anything from DC anymore.
Well, neither is anybody else, so it's okay. That's just not good. Welcome to episode 4 of the Bags and Boards podcast here on Geekade.com. I'm your host, Dan Ryan. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Chris Randazzo. We'll get there, Chris.
I'm holding my breath.
Don't. That's a bad idea.
I've also been doing a little work on we're remodeling Geekade. You know, doing a little behind the scenes on doing a nice snazzy remodel for Geekade, and I did a little bit of work on that earlier today. And I hung out with Leonard Herman the other day.
I saw that. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, he vacations near where I live, so it was on the Ocean City Boardwalk, and I walked up and down the boardwalk, got to see the hardcover edition of his book Phoenix 4, and it's freaking gorgeous. And we just walked around and talked about video games for hours, and we walked into arcades, and we learned a little bit about Raw Thrills, which is a company that's been making all these new arcade games for the last bunch of years.
Which is pretty awesome.
The guy who made Defender is like in charge of the company. So that's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the new Cruisin' game in the arcade, and it's got Nintendo's name all over it. Like, what? Okay.
What?
We doing that? All right. Cool.
What the
ass? It looked neat. And of course, I played Space Invaders Frenzy some more because it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, this just reminded me. We had we had a I don't even remember what it was, Facebook or Twitter. And I apologize because I feel like whoever sent these is probably listening to this episode, and now I can't remember who or where. But somebody, a couple of people were like super, you know, said some super nice things about the trivia episodes and just our show in general, which is great. But somebody specifically called out that they really appreciated the critic references. So
all right,
we need to maintain critic references on this show. I think it's important for all involved. Critic references.
I don't
they're
disagree.
Even better when you're dead.
Oh, this is going to be a shit show. I'm going to need like a week to prepare and brush back up, but just you wait. Episode 165, critic references.
Nothing but.
Calling
solid.
It already.
All right. So
no,
it's,
that's awesome, though. Like, I always, that is the thing I love about where we are in the world right now, is that we can get on here and do this stupid shit that we do every week, and we can make some people happy, and they can reaffirm how awesome The Critic was and how horrible it is that that show disappeared early and has not come back ever again. John Lovitz is a fucking American treasure.
I don't know that it could. You know, I'm happier with it being where it is than having it turn into, like, Family Guy or The Simpsons. Not that Family Guy's specifically awful or bad or anything like that. It just...
No, sure.
Those first couple of seasons of Family Guy are some of my favorite comedy ever. Like, they're so good. And, you know, after it came back, it lost just a tiny bit of its thing. And, you know, it's getting old. It's long in the tooth. And then Simpsons is just a hollow, sad shell of its former self.
Yeah, it really is.
But The Critic, man, it was solid.
So good.
Every single episode, solid stuff.
Anyway.
Booty, booty, booty! Yeah, boy!
Shit. God damn it, this is going
to
fucking devolve
needs to be
quickly.
More
all right, 10, 20, 30,
please. Podcast. 10, 20, 30. It's time for the 10, 20, 30, where we look back at games that came out 10, 20, and 30 years ago, and it is already late because I was out doing stuff. So let's dive in to 10 years ago, 2007. First game that I wrote down that was notable at the time was the first Mega Man Star Force. Dan, did you play this game?
No, god damn it. It was a bad idea that kept happening. The fucking NT battle wasn't bad enough. I mean, now to be fair, it certainly made enough money. You know, there was a show, and like it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they made another what? They made four Star Force games, and like they started going
and they
down.
Came out like 6 weeks apart from each other. Just well, kept like I, new whatever. Star Forces every minute.
But like, oh, I just did not. I did not care for these games. I didn't think they were that. Well done.
I liked the first Mega Man Battle Network. I bought that one when it came out.
Was that
like,
the GameCube one?
No, that was the Game Boy Advance one. The very first
okay.
piece of that whole puzzle. The very first of that whole series of spinoffs.
Right.
And I liked the idea of it. It was, you know, tangentially Mega Man, but it was a new thing. You know, Mega Man's been a fairly malleable property, so I didn't mind the fact that it had that Mega Man name on it. It was just, it was a neat kind of game. I did not expect it to turn into the annual drudgery that it became.
Right. I mean, eventually... but it was hugely popular. Like, we, for a brief period of time, we were very much in the minority with our opinion on that franchise.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely diminishing returns. It didn't keep getting bigger past a certain point, and by the time I think they hit Star Force, it was already kind of on its way down, and it, because it was, they Capcomed the hell out of it.
They really did.
It's just like, Pokemon's got two versions. We got three! Yeah, three different versions. You need three versions of this game, and you need to buy all of them. It's like, so guys.
The GameCube one wasn't that bad in that series.
That was the side-scrolling action game, right?
Yeah. That one was all right.
I didn't care for that one because you couldn't shoot very fast. But and it also was so far removed from the core of like what kind of game these the Battle Network series was. You
maybe
know,
that's why
like
I
like
it.
Kind of weird RPG-ish type thing. I think that was kind of neat.
Yeah, well, it was anyway, all right. It just, you know, it was notable.
It was notable. Persona 3 came out on PlayStation 2.
I really feel like I should give these games another chance.
I don't, because I know they're not for me. I get it. I get what they are. I get why people love them. Like, they are good at what they do. Like, I can look at this objectively and say this is a quality product, but it just ain't for me.
It's huge, though.
The people that love it absolutely love it, and it's awesome that like this is one of those games that I do not begrudge in the slightest that it exists.
Oh no, not at all.
I'm so glad that they make these Persona games because they're so weird, and the people that like them, like, it's not like they make a sequel and they're like, ah, this one's crap. You know, Persona 2 was the best ever. And every time they come out with a new one, it's like it seems like there's a decent amount of originality put into them. And the fan base for these games seems to genuinely like them. And I've been having a couple of online arguments because I can't seem to stop myself anymore. My tolerance for stupid is so low these days.
Well, there's just no time.
There's just no time for me to take a breath and tolerate. And I got into this argument with this guy. And Nintendo posted a trailer for... it's talking about Samus Returns. Mm-hmm. And the first guy is just like, I'm boycotting this and you should too, because it's an incomplete game and they finished it and they cut out content to hide behind Amiibo. And I'm like, oh my God, I cannot swallow this. Let people enjoy things, okay? You see, you're gonna skip buying this game to teach them a lesson.
Yeah.
Right? That's your plan? Not just skip buying the Amiibo? Because if you don't buy the Amiibo, that's what's shown in the people like the Amiibos, dude. It's not buying the game.
Yeah.
But, okay, sure, you're going to miss a secondary hard mode, a sound test, and some concept art.
Ooh.
Yeah, that makes the game incomplete, buddy.
God forbid.
There you go, right there. You finish the game, and then you finish the hard mode, and then you stop and think to yourself, you know what? Nintendo is a bunch of industry-ruining bastards, because there's no secondary hard mode in here.
There's an even harder mode.
You have the option of an even harder mode if you buy one of these cool little action figures. And if you don't, like, I might buy the Amiibo. I couldn't use them if I tried. I don't have a new 3DS, and I'm not going out and buying one of those silly Amiibo disc things.
No, that's fucking not happening. It's ridiculous.
So
it's
here we are.
It's a ridiculous thing to get upset about.
It is. Like, we're in this world.
It's not like you get to the final battle with Mother Brain and out she pops, and it's like, well, if you had the Amiibo, you could see how this story ends, but... Fuck you, you cheap bastard.
Exactly. It's not that at all. And we're looking at... So here's this community where there's all... And it wasn't just this one guy. There's so many people complaining about this. Like, you're getting a new Metroid game, for crying out loud. There's a new Nintendo-made 2D Metroid. You should be doing cartwheels no matter how many Amiibo they're trying to sell you.
It is a remake of the one Metroid game that most of us haven't finished.
Yeah, because it's obtuse as hell.
Yeah. Come on,
and
man.
You don't get that from the Persona crowd, which is where I was going with that story.
Yeah, no, you really
don't get that kind of crap with the Persona crowd.
You and I were just talking about Mega Man, of like, it's not really my Mega Man. And like Persona, they're like, give me the fighting game. That's awesome. It's great.
Sure,
pile
it on.
Give me the whole thing.
And, you know, that's also kind of, I guess, part of the difference with Mega Man is that, Like, yeah, we kind of could complain about those things because there were Mega Man. This is like the 349th Mega Man game that came out. Persona doesn't stretch themselves too thin because they don't Capcom it up.
As well they shouldn't.
As well they shouldn't. So moving on, also in August of 2007, we got Brain Age 2. For the
game
DS.
That your moms played because it was going to make them smarter.
I really enjoyed the Brain Age games.
They were fun.
I stuck with the first one, and Karen actually got the second one, and they had this really cool touchscreen version of Dr. Mario in it.
Yes, they did.
Just like this calm version of Dr. Mario, and I that was fantastic. No, I dug the hell out of the Brain Age games, and I don't know that they didn't make me smarter. Nothing's gonna do.
No,
that.
They don't.
They didn't make me smarter, but they did make me feel sharper. You know, like they just kind of made me.
It's reflex training.
Exactly. It's just like, how quickly can I solve these math problems? And that's not bad. That can't be bad for you. You know,
it's horrible.
Make me a more intelligent person, but it is kind of keeping me a little bit more awake. You know, when I used to do that first thing in the morning, that would help me go about my day feeling a little bit more, more alert. So,
yeah, no, they were cool. And then the problem with those games was that they just inspired some horrible knockoffs that made the whole genre just feel really cheap. Mm-hmm. Because the game is pretty cheap looking as it is, because what are you going to do? There's not a lot to make that big and flashy, but...
Yeah, you know, it was a very minimalist design, and it was intelligently done, and it was only $20 when it launched. So there you go. And... he makes a hell of an assist trophy. Have you seen the Professor Kawashima in Smash Brothers?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's hysterical. And now you're being attacked by numbers. I love Smash Brothers so much. I think so many people got pissed off with that Wii Fit trainer as one of the characters. I was like, that is brilliant.
I thought that genius. Was cool. Maybe that's why I don't get the Smash Brothers thing. Because I was like, that's fucking awesome.
I thought that was awesome, too. And having him as an assist trophy, like, I love assist trophies. One of my favorite things about Smash Brothers. You just throw something, and all of a sudden, and a bunch of Excitebikes are rolling across the screen, and they're knocking you down. Or the friggin' professor from Brain Age comes out, and now numbers are flying all across the screen, hurting you.
I wish I liked it. I wish I liked the fighting system. I really do.
Moving on. Brain Age. Awesome stuff. Also, at this time, see, this was a hell of a month.
It really was.
Because now we're seeing some pretty big releases here. I mean, not that Brain Age 2 wasn't a big release, because it was a big release. You know, games were huge, but also BioShock for Xbox 360,
which was awesome.
Yeah, this was another BioShock game. I wish I had played more of. I had borrowed it from a friend, and this was another one of those situations where I'm just not that good at first-person shooters, and I got my ass beat, and everybody else around me is talking about how far they got, and I was just like, I don't have time for this shit. That's it, I'm leaving. Play my Mario Kart and done. Move on. Nah.
BioShock is one of the few games that has really, really captured the atmosphere that they were going for.
Yeah, like, I loved watching videos of that game.
It just feels so different than anything else. And here's the thing about the whole BioShock franchise. It's not as good as everybody makes it out to be. Like, it is not life-changing, but it is very, very good. And there was an unbelievable amount of hype when that game first released. And, like, I know when I first played through it, and I played through it with Tiff, and I know some of our friends had played through it, and we were like, eh. Like, it's good, but my life didn't change, you know, and then come back to the game a year later and it's like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, once the hype had died down around the game, it was like, oh, this is a very good game. I know people kind of hated on BioShock Infinite, the third one in the series, mm-hmm. kind of tarnished it a little bit, but...
See, you know, I thought I'd heard most of that about 2.
Or is it 2 that people hated on?
I know I people hated on 2... And I know, I don't know about 3 as far as like how that would Infinite or whatever, how that went over for everyone. I feel like it went over fairly well. I liked the idea of Infinite. I didn't play it, but I really liked the idea because it was something so different. You know, the first one was all this underwater stuff, and they're like, well, now we're in the sky.
Yeah, it's cool. I don't know. I really do like these games. I think they are very, very good.
I will agree to the best of my ability. Because I don't fucking know.
The characters were just really cool. The Big Daddies were really cool.
And I really like that world. I really like the idea of that world. It's friggin' rad.
It's a very interesting world that got way overhyped.
It did. I mean, because it was such a big deal. Like, it was, holy heck, man, this game is insane. And it's really neat, and I do hope to play through it someday, you know, in my own, you know, when I'm retired and 150 years old, maybe I'll go back and play the first BioShock. And
I don't know. I felt kind of similarly with Borderlands. You know,
okay,
like same kind of thing of like when the game first came out and everybody told me that it's, you know, the greatest fucking thing. Like, all right, I'll check this out. And I was like, okay, like it's good, but it's not. Again, it didn't change my life. And then coming back to it later on, I was like, okay, now I see what we were getting at.
Yeah, I think I feel like Borderlands I got right from the get-go. That was another one of those things, kind of like a Persona, where I was like, I understand why this is awesome. It's not for me, but I get it. Mm-hmm. And like that was exactly it with Borderlands. Like, I recognized its innate awesomeness from the get-go. Just
not for you.
I was going with that. Yeah, just not for me. Just not for me.
The next game, though,
was very for me.
It's not for anybody.
You're crazy.
It's terrible.
Metroid Prime 3 for the Wii is a fantastic game.
I don't even think anybody played it.
Not enough people played it.
I don't think it sold very well. Sold like 7 copies.
It is, if I remember correctly, this was one of not one of the biggest selling games in the franchise. The Metroid Prime series did kind of have a lot of diminishing returns, and I think a lot of that had to deal with, I mean, we're talking about them selling a hardcore first-person action-adventure game on the system that people bought for Wii Sports. You know, those people weren't buying Metroid Prime 3.
No, they weren't.
And a lot of the people who played Prime 1 and 2 on GameCube didn't bother getting a Wii because
they didn't want to waggle.
Exactly. And this was one of the few games that, you know, the motion controls work in this game. And now this is kind of weird for me to go about, because when I played this game, the motion controls worked flawlessly. And I'm realizing now that a lot of this stuff happened when I was still playing on a CRT.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that had a lot to do with why I have had so much more success with motion controls than you have.
It's certainly possible.
Because I know, I will say that I've definitely had weirdness go on trying to play Wii U games. Like, I was trying to play my Prime Trilogy on Wii U, and I ran into the similar problems that you were talking about. And
where
that was really
just
upsetting.
Unplayable?
To me. Yeah, it just wasn't working. And that was pretty upsetting, because I feel like if you had the opportunity to play that in the right environment, you'd dig it. Because it friggin' worked, man. Like, they were very sparing with what they did with anything waggle-related.
Right.
And it was always intelligent, and it always added to the situation. They never did anything where, like, well, you have to do this very specific motion to do this thing in a high-stress situation. Because you can't do that with
motion
controls.
It's just not that precise.
Exactly. It's just not that precise. Yeah. So with Prime, the Prime Trilogy, and Prime 3 in specific, what we're talking about here, is they did these things where, like, you'd go up to a door, and you'd have to, like, push, you know, you'd have to plug in something in the door and turn a key, and you'd just do that with the remote. Not, like, you know, a big over-exaggerated gesture. You'd just walk up to it, and the screen would just say, put in the key and turn it. And you'd put it in, you'd turn the controller, and you just turned a key. It was a split-second thing. It was a very small immersion thing, you know? Mm-hmm. There was a bit in the beginning where you had to, Samus had to type in a landing code in the very beginning when you're on her ship, and you just type in the code by moving her hand with the motion controls. These small things helped with the immersion, and that was kind of the whole thing with the Metroid Prime universe, was the way they did them as first-person adventures was so crazy immersive. And using the grapple beam as a weapon was such an awesome addition, where you get to these guys with shields, and the grapple beam was done with shaking the nunchuck. which the nunchuck would just do waggle. It didn't have any kind of pointer to it, remember?
Right.
So, but it registered any kind of real shaking. So you'd get to a guy with a shield, and you'd use your left hand, and Samus would use her left hand with the grappling beam on it, and it would detach to their shield, and then you'd pull the nunchuck back, and she'd rip the shield out of their hands, and then you start shooting with your right hand. It was stuff like that really worked incredibly well in this game, but as I've learned, it had a lot to do with your environment. And
right.
If you had like a room with a lot of sun in it, your aiming is just not going to work right. It's just the limitation of the technology. Like, this stuff all works great now that I'm in a basement, and that's wonderful. But when I was up in my living room in my old apartment and I had the window right next to the TV where there's a lot of sun, if I wanted to do anything with pointer controls, I was shit out of luck. And that kind of sucks.
Yeah, that's a problem.
But,
you know, that's unfortunate.
Prime 3 was such a cool game. It did start to delve a little bit too much in the storytelling department, you know, because you weren't really alone in this game.
Right.
This is not sniffing. There's no character assassination like Other M. Like, they didn't make Samus into a moron. But you know, Samus was very well respected in this game, and it was cool to be in a world where, you know, Samus walks in on you know, onto the bridge of a spaceship, and a general is just like, I ain't fucking with you. and you dig
I'm out, man. I'm out.
This opening sequence, you have this great fight with Ridley where you're falling down this like gigantic shaft type thing, and he's got his arms and legs stretched out, grabbing onto the side to slow down, and then you'd like land in his mouth and shoot him in the mouth a bunch of times, and he'd like let go, and then he's flying around again, and then you'd fall into a tube and you'd go in your morph ball, and he's like trying to bite the pipe that you're in, and you're like laying bombs to blow his head up and stuff. There's so much cool stuff in the Prime games. That's why I'm so excited for Metroid Prime 4, whatever it may be. The game ain't flawless, but it's got a lot of really good stuff in it. I don't think any of them have been as good as the first Prime, but
right.
This, I think, was a big step up over Prime 2, which was, again, not bad, but Prime 3 was pretty excellent.
Hopefully, it will release on the Switch with non-motion controls.
Man, wouldn't that be great?
And remastered, then I will buy it.
Remastered Prime Trilogy in HD? Like, because those games need the HD treatment, okay? Like,
they
didn't
really
get
do.
The HD treatment on Wii U. They were just Wii emulation.
Right.
I want those games in HD and widescreen, no motion controls, just fantastic.
Yep. Ugh. And I will get them for the Switch that we are getting this Christmas, because now my daughter is obsessed with Splatoon. She has played it nonstop for, like, the last week. She's doing ranked matches online. She's all fucking hyped about it.
My niece is doing that too.
She
just bought her own copy
Splatoon
of
too.
The first
yeah.
Splatoon. And I've been playing Splatoon 2, which is great. I'm, you know, splitting my time between that and ARMS and Sonic Mania, but I've been probably playing more Splatoon than anything, and Splatoon 2 is great.
Yeah, Katie can't wait to play it. And like it's interesting watching them play, because like both of my daughters will go to play it, and Katie is enjoying the getting better at the game, whereas Penny is pissed off that she's not as good as she thinks she should be already, so she doesn't play it. You know, like, she picked it up and she was like, I know what to do, but I can't do it yet, and fuck all that noise.
Are they playing with motion controls or without?
No, they're playing with the Wii U pad.
But do they have the motion controls on or off?
Off, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because you have to play the first one with the gamepad.
Yeah.
You can't play it with a regular controller, because there's a lot of map stuff involved. And they did a good workaround on that in Splatoon 2, but I can't do the motion controls in that game. I can't do it.
Yeah,
I know there are people who swear by them.
I don't think she is. I don't know.
My niece plays it with the motion controls, and I'm just
really?
Like, I can't do this. I have to turn them off. And it's really bothersome because if they had just put the control scheme from Zelda in there, like those, it's got this minor aiming stuff that you can do with the gyroscope, but you
just
can also override it with the analog stick. That's not like that in Splatoon 2. It's just like all motion all the time, and I'm out. I can't aim for shit like that. Anyway, Metroid Prime 3 is great. So is Splatoon 2. Good times. Merry Christmas to all. You getting that bundle? Don't get that bundle.
No.
Don't get the Splatoon 2 bundle.
I don't bundle.
It's dumb. It's like $10 more expensive than it would be just buying the
set. Dude, I'm going to get whatever I can get at that point, you know.
Anyway. Yeah, that's a podcast for another podcast.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Blue Dragon.
It's certainly blue something. This game should have been so much better than it was.
That was like... So Microsoft did this weird push where they were like, no, we're going to be relevant in Japan. We're going to get a bunch of RPGs on our system.
Yeah, no, you're
not. And so they had Lost Odyssey, Eternal Sonata, and this. And this was the one that I was theoretically the most interested in because I love Akira Toriyama stuff.
Sure.
And this was like, this is the laziest character design I've ever seen Akira Toriyama do.
It is the worst.
It is just like... And this archetype, like, it's like they called him up, offered him $50, and he came up with these while sitting on the toilet or something.
It really, like, I'm looking at screenshots as we're talking, and it's like, well, there's fucking Captain Say, or what was
that? There's Goku, there's Bulma.
Yep. What was the, Captain Saiyan? It wasn't Captain Saiyan, was it?
Great Saiyaman.
The Great Saiyaman. Yep, there... That's in there, but it's got Android 13's haircut. Like, it's just...
It's so lazy. Like,
it's so lazy. Dude,
Akira Toriyama is Captain Same Face. We get it. But nobody's confusing Chrono for Goku, you know?
Right. Chrono Trigger is awesome.
On the Dragon Quest series. But this game, just the art direction was so lazy.
It really, really is.
And I didn't even... I didn't even mess with the game. I remembered seeing the trailers for it and thinking... I can't do this. I got no interest in this, and it wasn't because I was a Microsoft hater. I was a big 360 user. I loved my 360.
Oh, sure.
Still do. Great system. I couldn't wrap my head around this one.
Nope. Insulting to look at.
What was that?
It was insulting to look at. It's like, and, come on, man. Like, you got to give me something more than a cool faceplate.
Yeah, and, like, even the dragons didn't look all that good. There was just nothing about this game that looked good. And I know it's dumb to kind of base a decision based on graphics, but that is kind of part of selling
really.
It.
Not really. Because if I'm going to play this for 60 hours, that means I got to fucking look at it for 60 hours.
And that's the thing. It's not that it's not the graphics that's the problem. It's the art direction. And right. There's a big distinction there. Like, it's one of the reasons I like so many Wii games when people would say that, oh, but no, it's not an HD. Wii is shit graphics. Well... Graphics are one thing, art direction's another. And
right.
if a game has crappy storytelling, exactly. And it's hard to get into a storytelling situation if the art direction is crappy. I mean, I am in love with the QB character from Box Boy, who's a friggin' square with legs.
Right.
But they present him with personality. Yeah. It's the art direction that makes that work more than like just any other random square in a game.
Dude, Todd McFarlane is a phenomenal artist. The fucking horrible storyteller. The shit that happens in his comic books cannot happen from panel to panel. There's just not, it just doesn't make sense. You got to have like your panels have to flow. It's why you look at a guy like Frank Quitely, who I don't particularly like his artwork. But he is a phenomenal storyteller. The scenes make sense panel to panel. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get storytelling is far more important than what it actually looks like.
And I didn't, the game didn't even get me through the door to check out the storytelling.
No, I didn't either.
It looked stupid.
And honestly, it didn't get very many other people into it either.
I mean, there was like a DS sequel to it or something, but I think that was about as far as the series went. It seems pretty derelict now, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and it's got the fucking mechanic from Okage, which is this weird PS2 RPG where, like, your shadow fights for you, which is awesome, but, like, the dragons would... It's fucking weird. It's not
good. But it doesn't have any of the character of Okage, because you know what's great about Okage? If you don't know what Okage
Everything
is...
Everything is great about fucking Okage.
You are a kid whose sister... did something stupid and got cursed so that her shadow is pink, right? So that's the only negative thing happening to your sister.
Yep.
Her shadow is now pink. And your parents like your sister so much more than you, they sell your soul to break that curse.
Which is awesome.
I never finished that game, but I loved the premise so much. That game's ridiculous. Check it out. Okage the Shadow King for PlayStation 2. It was like a really early PS2 game. It's a blue disc game. Check it out. It's fantastic.
It's great. I'm looking at the Metacritic for Blue Dragon, by the way. Mm-hmm. 79%.
Really?
Yeah. It didn't sell very well, though, I don't think.
Well, I mean, it was crappy art direction, an RPG on the Xbox 360 where most people, that's not where the audience was for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe it is worth playing, but I would.
Yeah, I got way too many other things. If I'm going to play an RPG on the Xbox 360, I'm told Lost Odyssey is the one. So
yeah, well, there you
I'll try that one first. So this next one I put on here because this was kind of the start of a cool trend. And this is Dynasty Warriors Gundam.
Which is just fun.
Exactly. I don't love the Dynasty Warriors games, but every now and then they're fun to pick up and just mash buttons and blow things up. And this was kind of the start of the trend of Dynasty Warriors saying, let's just do this forever universe, right? What's something about beating other things up? Gundam? Fist of the North Star? Done. Yeah.
Sold.
Hyrule Warriors is still so absurd to me.
It's good.
I love that game. I've barely played it. I'm so glad I own it because every now and then I just like to throw it in and be like, well, now I'm a boat. But you can tangle and beat up people with a bag of rupees because why not?
Yeah.
So Dynasty Warriors Gundam. I saw the name of this come out. Like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. Dynasty Warriors Gundam? Like,
yeah.
Dynasty Warriors is about, you know, this period of time and Gundams, whatever. Doesn't matter because it was like, oh, okay, I get it. It's Dynasty Warriors, but they just replaced it with the Gundam universe. So now you're a Gundam doing the Dynasty Warriors thing. I'm sold. Like, I'm so
mindless
glad this
fun.
Exists. Exactly. Mindless
it's worth
fun.
$20.
Yeah.
It wasn't worth like 60 or whatever when it came out. I don't even know if it was full price, but
I believe it was, yeah.
Yeah. Not worth that.
It. People like Gundam. If you're a huge Gundam fan, I could see that.
Oh, sure.
Being worth your. Yeah, but that was like selling Hyrule Warriors to me. Like, I'm not a Dynasty Warriors fan. I'm a Zelda fanatic. So of course I was willing to pay full price for that game.
Right.
And I got my money's worth out of it. The amount of time I spent laughing playing Hyrule Warriors was worth my time. So the last one of August of 2007 to bring up is Lair for PlayStation 3.
This should have been so much better.
This should have been so good.
It really
Poor
should have
Factor
been.
Factor 5.
But again, this was... And thankfully, Sony didn't go down this road too often with when the PlayStation 3 came out. But PlayStation 3 also had motion controls.
Mm-hmm.
And they just shoehorned it into this game. Because this game, still to this day, looks gorgeous.
Dude, Factor 5 knows how to make good-looking games.
This game...
Look at their GameCube Star Wars games. They still look amazing.
They still look good. And this was a game where, like, you just fucking controlled a flying dragon.
This was Rogue Squadron on a dragon. How could this have possibly been bad?
Well, if you make it have motion controls that also at the time did not have rumble, you get a game nobody wants to fucking play.
Yeah, it just wasn't fun to play. That's it's like rule number one, guys. This is and Nintendo did the same thing with Star Fox. Rule number one, it's got to be fun to play.
Yeah.
And they didn't make it fun to play. They made it stupid to play.
Just because you could doesn't mean you should.
Yeah. But
if this had dual analog controls, this would have been of a runaway smash of a franchise.
I don't know if it would have gone that far because I still feel like it's a relatively niche thing, but it would have been big. You know, I don't think it would have been like God of War levels of holy crap amazing, but they probably could have turned it into a solid franchise. Like,
oh, it would have been huge.
Yeah, it would have been successful.
I have no doubt.
And the makings of a good thing here.
And if they brought this back now with Game of Thrones having the popularity that can... And can we just spoilers... talk about that for 1 second.
Sure.
Fuck. Spoilers. Zombie dragon. Shit. Like, I saw it coming. I knew it was going to happen eventually. Like, I knew there would have to be an ice dragon at some point. And
I didn't think it was going to be one of hers.
No, I thought maybe like it was in the wall, and like when the wall got torn down, like a ice dragon would pop out of the fucking wall, because that would have been cool.
Or they just build one or something like
that. Or they just make some one sort out of dark like spare walkers.
Dark just magic like or something. They throw a bunch of them in an ice volcano, because that's a thing in my imagination. And out comes an ice dragon. Something like
He just glues pieces of dumb cunt together, which is what that walker's name is now. Or that white,
and honestly,
I guess we call it.
The hound, he was the dumb cunt in that situation.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my God. And people are hating on that episode. I don't fucking care at all.
Yeah, they can hate on it all they want.
Again, nerds, shut up. It was awesome.
Let people enjoy things. For Christ's sake, where'd they get the chains from?
Who gives a shit? Where'd
there's
they get the
zombies
dragon from?
Pulling a dragon out of the water, and you want to know where they got the friggin' chains from?
Yeah.
How about they've been fighting against the people at the wall, the Night's Watch, for eons, and they literally have those chains at the wall.
That's sold. That's where they got them from. Done.
Fuck's sake.
Because that's where you suspend your disbelief. I was fine up until they had these big fuck-off chains. I mean, where could zombies even possibly... Chains are us? That's not even a thing that would exist in Westeros. Like, fuck you. It was awesome. I am fucking terrified for what's going to happen.
Oh, my God.
I was so sad, but, like... I was so sad that Viserys got killed. It was Viserys, right? That's the one?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I was so sad that the dragon got killed, but so excited that Tormund didn't get killed.
Oh, my God. I was the same way. We're like, no, no, stop. No, you need to go make giant, beautiful babies.
That was such a good line. I'm going to have giant, beautiful babies with her. It was fucking awesome. Oh, so good. So good. So with all of that, like, if this came out now, dude, this would be fucking huge, but it's toxic.
Yeah, exactly. You know? You can't make Lair now and... Factor Five, that was pretty much killed them. So
pretty much,
but
such a shame.
Somebody could make. Where the hell is Panzer Dragoon?
Mm-hmm.
Now's the time.
Dragons have arguably never been more popular.
Exactly.
Than they are right now.
You thought Dragonheart with Sean Connery was the pinnacle of dragon popularity?
I mean, we've got the Dragons Riders of Berk show on fucking Netflix, which is actually really good.
They made a Reign of Fire video game, didn't they?
They really did.
Did they make a game out of that movie?
Oh, of course they did. I'm sure it was a GameCube game. I'm looking it up right now. Reign of Fire. Reign of Fire game. Thank you, Google Autofill. Oh, it was a PS2 game, and there was a GameCube version.
Spectacular. I bet
and
it was awesome.
And there was
too.
A Game Boy Advance version.
Ooh.
The Game Boy Advance version gets a 6.3 out of 10, whereas the PlayStation 2 version got a 4.7 out of 10.
Wow.
That's impressive. But it was made by BAM Entertainment. And I mean, BAM Entertainment, if you know anything about BAM, well, then you've got a bunch of Dexter's Laboratory games. And you've got a bunch of Powerpuff Girls games. They did publish Fire Pro Wrestling in the United States for Game Boy Advance, so that's good.
They didn't make that game. They just published it.
No, they made a really shitty Samurai Jack game.
Ugh.
Which, why doesn't Samurai Jack have a good game?
Seriously.
Like, come on. I mean, the Game Boy Advance one was okay. We're getting way off topic
here. Yeah, we're way off topic here. It's
it was okay, but BAM Entertainment, not known for their track record.
Not known for quality, just like Lair for PlayStation 3.
Oh, that was good. All right, 1997.
20 years ago, 1997. August 1997. NHL 98 came out for the PlayStation.
And it was awesome.
And
it's not
awesome.
NHL 94, but hockey games are so much fun.
They are. They really are.
They're just good. I mean, they're just a good time. I certainly prefer. I don't even know what that is. I certainly prefer the fucking
NHL 90 prefer?
90 prefer. the Genesis ones. Just because they were a little bit more simplistic, like the EA went a little nuts later on in the franchise where, like, you can do tricks with the fucking right analog stick. I don't want to do that. I just want to truck this guy and have the fucking dudes come out and carry him off the ice.
I want to play video game hockey.
Yeah, like, I'm not trying to be all street about it, but...
If I wanted to play hockey, I'd go out and play hockey.
Yeah, but I don't want to fucking do that. I'd have to use my legs. Ugh. Gross. Yeah, hockey games are great. NHL 98 was great. And the franchise is still good.
Yeah, EA's done a solid job with the NHL games. Good on them. Next up was Nuclear Strike for PlayStation. Did you play this? Because I didn't.
I'm sure I did at some point. I don't remember
any of the Strike
it.
Games. Never played a single one of them.
I mean, like, I don't remember loving it like I did the NES games that were... they weren't the Strike games. What the fuck were they? What's the helicopter NES game?
Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, that's the one.
Tiger Heli?
Tiger Heli. Like, shit like that I really love.
Mm.
You know? Because there was a simplicity to it. Like, this was in the era of PlayStation games where, like, the controls were a little wonky and everything looked kind of like a really shitty photo.
Mm.
You know? Like, it's just not... I think Urban Strike was the one that I really played and liked.
It was the Genesis game. Or it's been Genesis a while. And Super Nintendo. Yeah, I don't know. I don't it's know the Strike games all that well. I know they had their fans, and I'm kind of surprised they're not around anymore. But
well,
sure,
it was.
I'm sure EA will get back.
I was going
to
say it's something that EA killed when they started focusing on, like, they kind of dropped. Because there was that period of time where EA dropped their... like their original IPs mm-hmm. and just started like going really hardcore sports and licensed.
Yeah. And the Medal of Honor got really big on PlayStation around.
That's true too. You know. Yeah. That kind of took away everything.
Speaking of PlayStation and Saturn, we also got Warcraft 2 on PlayStation and Saturn.
Never played it.
Same here. Moving on. Mortal Kombat Trilogy came out for PlayStation.
Yes. Love Mortal Kombat Trilogy so
much. Mortal Kombat Trilogy is so great. I wish they would make a definitive version of it. Because I got Mortal Kombat Trilogy on N64.
Mm-hmm. Which is terrible.
That's just it. It's not. It's really good, except it doesn't have the content that the PlayStation game has.
Right.
But it has no loading time.
I'll take the loading times.
No way. There's friggin' loading times between Shang Tsung transformations, for crying out loud. That is no.
Don't play as Shang Tsung. Problem solved. Who the fuck plays as Shang Tsung anyway?
I play as Shang Tsung.
Of course you fucking would play as Shang Tsung.
I play as everybody.
Son of a bitch.
Except Stryker. Stryker sucks. But anyway.
Dude, Stryker was amazing. You're so fucking wrong.
So I got the N64 version, which looks fantastic, plays fantastic, but is missing all the costumes and I think one or two of the boss characters. Mm-hmm. So it was gimped as hell. And then you go over to the PlayStation 1 and the loading times are atrocious.
They really are.
Just awful. And then you get the Saturn version eventually, which came out a while later, and it was like a somewhere between the PlayStation and the N64 one, but not in a good way.
Yeah, loading times were better, but it was uglier somehow.
Yeah, it just wasn't.
Didn't it have like more characters?
I think it had the same number of characters as the PlayStation one. I don't know if it had all the alternate costumes. Like you could play as Mortal Kombat 1 Kano in Mortal Kombat Trilogy, which is great.
Which is awesome.
Dude, Mortal Kombat Trilogy is great. I just wish they would come out with a cool, like, arcade edition of it that has all the graphics and sound and whatnot of an arcade quality version, except, you know, no loading times or anything, just a proper remastered Mortal Kombat Trilogy, because this was the last Mortal Kombat game I genuinely loved, because this is the last one that had that very distinct, you know, stupid digitized live action character thing going on, which I loved.
It was great.
And
I did like 4. Deadly Alliance, but
yeah,
I hated Mortal Kombat 4. I
loved that game for about an afternoon. There was an afternoon of Mortal Kombat 4 where I rented it on N64, and I friggin' loved it. Just the stupidity. You just pick up a rock and bludgeon somebody with it, and with Quan Chi ripped off that guy's leg and beat him to death with
it. That's the only cool part of it.
It's
the only cool part.
And then after that afternoon, anytime I tried to play that game, I was like, ugh.
That's awful.
This is awful.
It's awful. I really like Deadly Alliance, though. That game, I genuinely enjoyed.
Yeah, I think I remember playing it at your dorm at the time.
I think probably in the apartment. I played a lot of Blind Kenshi at that point.
I could not get into that game. I just couldn't. I didn't. I wanted to like it because I was a huge Mortal Kombat fan.
Yeah.
Like, a ridiculous Mortal Kombat fan. I adored that game and its mythology and its characters. I freaking love Mortal Kombat. But after 4, it just none of the games have grabbed me. I just can't do it. It didn't catch on with me. I didn't like it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
I didn't like it.
No, sir. I don't like it. Well, Mr. Horse.
We are all kinds of behind, so let's blow through a couple of these. There's a trio of important Saturn games. Resident Evil 1 finally came out on Saturn. It's a serviceable port of the first Resident Evil. Good.
It's as good a version of that until they remastered it.
Exactly. Saturn Bomberman came out, which was a great Bomberman game. I've never been the hugest Bomberman fan, but I understand that this is this is a very well respected one, and I've played a few minutes of this one. It's nice. It's good Bomberman. And Sonic Jam came out, which was neat. It was like Super Mario All-Stars, except they didn't improve the original Genesis games at all.
Right.
But they had that kind of neat 3D map thing that you could run around and be like, oh, so this is what a 3D Sonic game could be like. I wonder why they didn't make one of these.
I wonder why they didn't do this.
So that was neat. And I don't know, there's something about the cover art for that game I really like. It's very, very simplistic. It's just, I really liked the art style on it. Next one on the list is a little game, you've probably never heard of it.
Probably.
Tetris. Probably not. No. GoldenEye came out for Nintendo 64 in August 1997, and, pretty much reinvented, opened up the world to home console first-person shooters, really.
It really did.
They had existed before, but this was the first one that I know of that really mainstream caught the F on.
Oh, as far as home consoles are concerned, like, absolutely.
PC gamers had been first-person shootering for a while. This was breaking into that on the home consoles, though, because, you know, and analog sticks hadn't been around on home consoles all that long, and
and it was just the perfect storm with analog sticks on the home consoles and native 4-player. Like, you didn't have to get any sort of adapters or anything, so native 4-player. And we were finally at that point. Like, what seems kind of crazy now that, you know, everybody has giant televisions hanging in their living rooms, or at least in their living rooms somewhere, you know, like, the gone are the days of, like, oh, I got a 27-inch TV. Look at fucking how, like, high roller, watch out, back up, you know. It was around 20 years ago when big, decent CRTs became relatively affordable.
Yeah.
To where you could have a TV big enough to play 4-player split screen on and not be looking at this tiny little box. It was still actually playable. So at that point, it just became a thing that, I mean, this took over. You couldn't find a college dorm common room across the country that did not have a TV and a 64 hooked up to it for this game.
And not only that, you also had GoldenEye was a huge movie.
Huge, you know, hugely successful.
Absolutely great. Pierce Brosnan, tie-in.
Sexy as fuck in that movie.
And the game is fun.
And the game is fun.
Like, I don't even, I've said many times, I don't love this game, but it is fun. It's messing around with it. It doesn't control poorly. I mean, obviously, it hasn't aged extraordinarily well. You're playing it with a single analog stick, but
right. And it may be the ugliest game on the system.
Oh, God, no.
Dude, you get up close to those faces.
Dude, hybrid heaven.
No, I would take that over this.
Oh, God. Oh,
this game is no ugly way. As shit.
The GoldenEye is ugly as shit. You're absolutely right. Most N64 games are, but there is some seriously ugly shit on the N64. I mean, like, nightmare-inducing. Just, how did this make it past? How did this get into a box? How
this
did
game
you do this?
Makes fucking nightmare creatures on the 64 look like the Mona Lisa. So ugly. So ugly.
Oh, God.
Have you seen the remake of this?
I have.
The fan-made It's supposed to...
Wait, the fan-made one or the actual EA one?
The fan-made one.
Oh, and I haven't seen the fan-made one.
I'll try and find a link to it so we can put it in the show notes. It's gorgeous.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, because they're never going to remake this game.
No.
Not this version of this game, because you've got to do the Pierce Brosnan license, likeness. You've got to do the GoldenEye license. You've got to make nice between Nintendo, Microsoft, and Rare.
Which isn't going to happen.
Like, I mean, it might. Nintendo and Microsoft are getting along pretty well these days, but...
Not with all... What I'm saying is not with all the rest of that.
Yeah, like, not with all the rest of that stuff going on. No freaking way.
Yeah.
Like, this game is a licensing nightmare. It is lightning in a bottle, and I guarantee it's not as good to go back to as you may think it is. Because first-person shooters have evolved a lot since this game.
They really have. GoldenEye Source
GoldenEye.
is the name of the game.
GoldenEye Source. All right, yeah. I'll take a look. So we got two more from 1997 before we take our break. I can't believe we're going to take a break and come back. So Tetrasphere came out for Nintendo 64 as well. Not nearly as popular as GoldenEye, but still a pretty rad game.
No.
I've never played it, actually. It's pretty neat. I haven't played it in years. Like, I have not played it since I rented it one time. And I dig it. It's got badass music. It's cool. So yeah, it's spherical Tetris. Enjoy. and then I don't even know why I wrote this one down, but Lost World Jurassic Park came out for Game Gear. Oh, this is why I wrote it down, because it's friggin' weird. Came out for Game Gear, Game Boy, and R-Zone. No. Com? Was it?
I don't know. And Game.com. Yeah.
And that's right, in Gamecom. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what you just did to the text.
I see.
Just
I
hit
did.
The undo button.
Yeah, there we go. Yep, Jesus it came Christ. Came out for Game Gear, Game Boy, and R-Zone, and Gamecom, or whatever.
Whatever that online shittiness was.
Yeah, because Gamecom was a thing, and as was the R-Zone.
Those were all things that existed.
They sure were.
There you go, I fixed it for you.
Good job. Good work.
I'm here for
it's beautiful. You. So that happened.
Much better book than movie or game.
Word. Yeah, that movie sucked.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
That was a bad movie.
Bad.
Bad. Just... Go lay down.
On that note,
we're going to take ourselves a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have a pretty short second half, although there are some very important games to talk about here. Back in 30 years ago in 1987. But you're listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast on Geekade.com. Stick around. And now here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, Nonstop Comic Shop is all new this week with an in-depth conversation about everyone's favorite lady hipster police captain, Jean DeWolf. Marvel at her career. Sorry, you put a comma in there. And I'm like Ron Burgundy. Marvel at her career, downfall, defeat of RC car enthusiasts, and eventual death. Plus, could Superman's real kryptonite be Henry Cavill's mustache? Don't miss all the action in Nonstop Comic Shop Episode 3. DeWolf Among Us. Clever.
good job on that title. Really made me chuckle.
That's a good one.
And Henry Cavill's mustache. Have you seen the glorious photoshops of...
I have not.
Just look up Henry Cavill's mustache.
It's time for Burt Reynolds' mustache.
Great pictures of Henry Cavill with a mustache. Because they had to do reshoots in Justice League. But Henry Cavill was a... contractually obligated to have a mustache for a different role that he's doing, so they're going to digitally remove his mustache.
Spoilers, man. Superman's mustache. Not been in any of the trailer.
That's right, because he died at the end of the last movie.
There's no way
to make it. I hate you so much. I hated that movie so... Next, this month, the author of our horror movie review series celebrates his birthday. Happy birthday, Alex Azar. You don't listen to this show, but happy birthday anyway. Celebrates his birthday by writing about an underrated Stephen King flick he liked more than most others did. It bears some resemblance to The Shining, but Geekade's Alex Azar explains how it stands on its own. Don't miss Macabre Movie Mausoleum 1408.
1408 is dope as fuck. That is a good movie.
Alex agrees with you.
It's a really good movie. John Cusack is awesome in that flick. Not my favorite Stephen King thing. That is still a needful thing, but neither here nor there. Finally, have you ever wondered how your favorite Geekade media comes together?
No.
Oh. Okay. Well, in case you did wonder, wonder no more, because Dean and Matt have the answers for you in a new podcast. In their first episode, they share behind-the-scenes details from the production end of our recent charity live streaming event, the Peetathon. Check out Behind the Geek Episode 1, the second first episode.
You can catch all this great stuff, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at geekade.com. We're back. Let's talk about games that came out in August 30 freaking years ago.
God damn it.
R-Type hit the arcades.
Fuck, yes, R-Type.
R-Type's awesome.
I love R-Type.
I
love
Super R-Type. I can't remember the last time I played R-Type.
I love R-Type 3. I love fucking all of them. R-Type is Delta. Awesome.
R-Type Delta for PS2 is freaking rad.
It really is. The original arcade R-Type, though, was like... There was something about it that made it so much cooler than all of the other space shooters.
Except maybe Gradius. I remember there being this kind of like back and forth between like Gradius and R-Type, because they were both cool in their own unique ways. And, you know, Gradius had that kind of cool Konami charm to it at the time. Yeah. But R-Type was just had its own distinct flavor. And
there's just something about R-Type.
I prefer R-Type to Gradius.
I do,
but
too.
I understand the set why some people would prefer Gradius.
I mean,
R-Type is so freaking cool.
It's no Zaxxon, but...
But what is?
But what is? Not much, thanks. I love Zaxxon, but R-Type is awesome. And it's been incredibly successful. And, like, we'll eventually get to talk about R-Type 3. And R-Type 3 is just...
R-Type 3 is great.
Perfect.
And the TurboGrafx-16 port of the original R-Type is fantastic.
It really is.
Also, 30 years ago, we got the original Wonder Boy on the Sega Master System.
Which has... We haven't done a podcast on the long, strange journey of what the Wonder Boy franchise is, right?
I actually... Well, I did. On the episode of Waveback, I did the Wonder Boy 3, the Dragonstrap soundtrack, and I... laid out the lineage of Wonder Boy, and it was confusing.
We might have to revisit that at a
we
later
might,
point.
Because, wow.
It's a weird story.
Adventure Island is, in fact, Wonder Boy, and at a certain point, Wonder Boy became literally a game called Adventure Island.
It's so awesome. This first one, it's okay.
Yeah, it's all right. It's got nothing in common with
nothing.
The Wonder Boy, the Dragon's Trap, or even the second one. Like it's got nothing in common with it because it's Adventure Island,
and it's
which
okay.
is weird because Adventure Island is actually Wonder Boy. I think Wonder Boy came first, and then Hudson got the ability that Hudson was allowed to port the game to Nintendo, and they slapped their own character on it, and it is literally that game, which is an okay game.
I always felt it was a lot harder than it should have been. There's just some control elements to it that you didn't have much else to do. It controls weird. Some of the physics are very strange in it. There's certainly a charm to it, and I understand why the Adventure Island series took off after that.
Yeah, and as the Adventure Island games kept going, they got better at being this kind of game. Like, right. they took this formula and kept improving on it, whereas the Wonder Boy games went a completely different route.
Mm-hmm.
Like, completely and totally unrecognizable from the original Wonder Boy. If you played Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap, and then you went back and said, I want to play the original Wonder Boy, you'd be like, who? What?
In the bluest of hells is this?
This has absolutely nothing to do with it.
Oh, fabulous. God.
And
cover
then
art,
Super Adventure Island 2, which is kind of like a Wonder Boy modern game. It's, oh, God, it's I love weird. This lineage. Yeah. It's so confusing.
So fun.
So bizarre. The NES port of Arkanoid came out in August of 1987.
I love Arkanoid.
Me too. And I played so much of the NES game. My friend had the VAUS controller.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It played well enough without it.
I think his name was Adam. Adam Kupel had the VAUS controller. And man, oh man, I played the crap out of that at his house. I loved playing Arkanoid.
It played well enough without it, though. I mean, like, it was...
It did. It was perfectly usable without it.
It wasn't like Root Beer Tapper, where you were like, well, this isn't anywhere near as fun. Sucks.
It's terrible.
Stupid.
I love Arkanoid. I've gone on and on about how, you know, I really love the Super Nintendo Arkanoid. Arkanoid, Do It Again.
Oh, Jesus. I haven't thought about that game and probably never would have again until you mentioned it.
That game was fantastic and extra fantastic when used with the mouse controller because you could totally control it with the Mario Paint mouse and it was great. Next up on the list is Legend of Kage for NES.
Yes, I'm so glad you said that correctly.
Legend of Cage.
Legend of Cage.
Ninja Gaiden.
Ninja Cajun. Ninja Cajun would be a way
Ninja
better
Cajun.
Game.
Ninja Cajun.
Never mind. That actually sounds amazing.
The just a game about Bayou Billy.
I was going to say, it's just a game about Gambit at that point. But anyway, fucking Legend of Kage is an awesome game. Fucking love that game.
I have never played it.
Really?
Yeah, this one totally got past me. I own it now, and I just never went back to play it.
It is very
cool. No, that's
cool.
Not true. I did actually try it on my Raspberry Pi, and I don't remember when or why, but it just came up, and I remember there was a lot of jumping.
There is a tremendous amount of jumping.
Lots of trees, lots of jumping.
I love the way the characters look, though.
I saw the arcade version of this in a Pizza Hut when I was a kid. I remember that. I was in a Pizza Hut back when Pizza Huts had arcades, and they had Legend of Kage there. And I'm looking at it like, well, that looks neat. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have any quarters on me, so I couldn't try it.
It's awesome. I love Legend of Kage. It's one of those games that, like, it happened to hit at the same time that I was completely and totally in love with, like, kung fu films as well. So I was like, all right, I'm in.
Wow, yeah, I was, like, pretty much built for you specifically.
Yeah, this is for me. This is exactly for me. I thought the characters looked super cool. The environment, like, it's not super detailed, but what is there was very familiar to, like, kung fu films. I fucking dug it.
Good cool, stuff. Man.
Good stuff.
All right, we're going to finish this out with two NES games that came out in America in August 1987, and that is Metroid and The Legend of Zelda.
Two games that they really should have maybe spread out a little bit.
No, I get it. Especially at this time, you know, you're talking about two very different kinds of games, and they're just, like, really all over the map as far as, like, they're both adventure-type games, but one of them's a sci-fi action game. The other one's a medieval-style adventure game. You couldn't pull this off now, but this was back when, like, 30 years ago, we were still looking at arcade-style games. Like, you know, Legend of Kage, from what I come to understand, is an arcade-style game. You know, we just talked about Arkanoid, Wonder Boy, R-Type. These are very arcade-y games, and Nintendo was kind of carving out this niche for themselves by making games that you never would have seen on an Atari. Like, they're games that you need to sit down and spend some time with.
They really did just... You can see, like, looking at this list, R-Type, Wonder Boy, Arkanoid, Legend of Kage, Metroid and The Legend of Zelda, Nintendo was so far ahead of everybody else in their thinking as far as where they wanted the industry to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's astonishing to think that all of those games came out in the same month.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Because you could not get any more different with Metroid and Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, they're huge, especially for the time. They're just physically gigantic games to do all this great exploring. And I mean, we've talked at great length about these games on this show before. You know, we did our Zelda retrospective and a Metroid retrospective,
right?
And it just can't be overstated enough that these games are amazing. Zelda, I think, has aged a little bit better than the original Metroid, but
I still love the original Metroid.
Oh, I still love the game. Definitely.
I don't know that I would say it's aged poorly. I don't know.
It's a bit obtuse. I mean, you still got to bust out the graph paper and make a map if you're going to find your way around that game. There's a lot of corridors that look the same. It's classic Nintendo hard. That game is not easy at all.
No, the amount of shit that's on the screen when you're trying to blow up Mother Brain. What the fuck?
It's ridiculous, and like you take a ton of damage. Mm-hmm. Like, when you go down in an Orfair for the first time, and you don't have the Varia suit yet, like you take damage.
Yeah,
everything kills the crap.
Everything hurts.
And the Metroids were genuinely scary if you didn't know how to fight them. Like if you didn't know about freezing them and shooting them with five missiles, like so you'd just good. Be like, what do I do?
Yeah, like that game was scary, man. And Legend of Zelda was. Like, I never thought Legend of Zelda was scary. I just always was just fascinated by it.
It was. It definitely had an eeriness to it, and more so in Zelda 2. Like, I talked about that a lot, but there was a definite eerie. Like, that dungeon music is, like, it's just eerie. It's and great. There was a lot of eerie music in Metroid as well. Like, talk about two great soundtracks. I mean, this is Koji Kondo and Hip Tanaka. It's some of their finest work on these two games, and Jesus, criminy.
It was August of 1987 is when shit officially got real.
Yeah, as far as video games go, yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, this is not at all what we thought it was going to be. Because even looking at Super Mario Brothers before that was not... That was an arcade-style game. You know,
yeah, more or less. It was arcadey. It did have an ending, but you could still play that game for points. You could still get a high score in that kind of a game.
Like, it's very easy to see, to imagine in your mind what the arcade version of Super Mario Brothers would be.
Well, there was an arcade version of Super Mario Brothers.
Well, but you see what I'm saying.
I do, yes. And that's the thing. I don't think there was a versus Metroid or a versus Legend of Zelda. There was a versus Super Mario Brothers, and it was, you know, a little weird, but it's essentially the same game, and you play it on an arcade cabinet and all nine yards. I mean, it was a sequel to Mario Brothers, but it was the first step in that direction. Metroid and Legend of Zelda were that direction. That was like, and this is what a console game can be.
Yeah.
Because we're not tied back by anything arcade related here. There's no multiplayer competition here. You are out, you're on a quest, and you're on an adventure, and you're doing these things.
Yeah, this was really taking things back to some of the ideas that Atari was going for, you know, with shit like adventure, but that they just simply couldn't pull off given hardware limitations at the time. Or even some of the stuff that PC games were trying to do with some of the, you know, things like fucking Zork and shit like that. You know, these text-based adventures where were given life, and it was, oh, shit, all right. It was just a complete and total sea change of a moment. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah, they both of these games are pure genius. And I love them.
As well you should.
Speaking of things I should do... Let's go to bed. That's our show. Together. Come on over, Dan.
I'll try anything once. Or in our case, seven times. But, you know, whatever. It's fine.
Anyway, yes, that is indeed our show. We're going to end on that note. join us next week as we're going to try something a little bit new next week. If you may or may not know, I do another podcast on Geekade called Waveback, and it's about video game music. I am obsessed with video game music. I love video game music, and Waveback is a show that just focuses on video game music, and I'm trying to find ways to cut down on the amount of things I do in my life. So I want to fiddle with the idea of maybe incorporating the occasional music episode into the Stone Age Gamer podcast. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a music episode next on next week's episode of Stone Age Gamer. Dan and I are going to listen to and play for you, obviously, as well, the Mega Man 2 soundtrack. And we're going to talk about the tracks after we're done listening to them. And we want to know what you think of this, because if you don't want us to do more music episodes, then we won't. But if you think they're pretty cool, or if you're already subscribed to Waveback and this isn't miles out of your way, then let us know that as well. We're going to give it a try, and if you like it, thumbs up. If not, just let us know, and I'll just keep doing Waveback on its own and find the time to do it when I find the time to do it. But it's something I'm excited to try. There's lots of question marks floating around in my head of the actual logistics of what I do with Waveback if this indeed takes off. But I feel like it's a good way to consolidate things in my existence. So
and also
we're going to give it a try.
It's a good excuse to get me to do a Waveback with you, considering we've tried to schedule it 15 different times and it just never lines up. So
that is true.
We might as well just do it on the
Mega Man 2 soundtrack with Dan.
Yeah.
I'm
excited for that.
We're going to try it, and please send us some feedback. Let us know what you think of the episode and if you want more of them. Cause if it goes over well, the idea would be to do one episode a month that focuses on just us listening to and talking about video game music, which is something I love more than anything in the world. So
yeah, and we're out of ideas. We need to pad this.
Exactly. We're out of ideas. So once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade KRIS, and Dan is available
at Geekade Dan.
Also on the Instagram. If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And we'd also like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for more fresh original content. That's it, everybody. Let us know what you think of video game music, and keep playing games.